like how quickly things can get taken away from you is so unfair. 1 minute you're playing golf, and the next minute you're almost dead.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
So where were you, I guess, where were you born? Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Mississauga.
Yeah.
Lived in Milton for a little bit. Then when I graduated elementary school, went to high school in Etobicoke for a bit.
Okay.
And this past summer, I just moved to Hamilton, but grew up in Mississauga primarily, yeah.
And then, I guess, paint the picture for me a little bit. Like, what did your dad do for a living, and what kind of sports were you playing when you were little?
Yeah, he was a referee in the OHL and American Hockey League for a while.
Okay.
And then he worked on the side, just like a trucking business, but he had like a hockey school. So I was there all the time, and I grew up playing hockey for the majority of my life.
Right.
And
so you played, what would you play, Triple A hockey, like growing up?
Yeah, I played Triple A hockey for a bit.
Yeah.
Up until I was probably 15 or 16 maybe.
Yeah.
And then wanted to do more golf, so I dropped down to Double A for a bit and just played high school hockey.
Right.
And then COVID hit and I kind of just stopped playing hockey. But
right. Yeah. So when were you introduced to golf, and was it like as serious as hockey right away?
No, not really. Like a couple of my buddies on the team, they wanted to go to the range like Friday night or whatever, and they kept bugging me. So I was like, all right, sure, let's just go. And all I wanted to do was like hit driver as far as I could, right?
Yeah.
And then we kind of went like every week. Every Friday night we kind of went, and then just gradually got just better and wanted to do more from there.
So you realized in yourself that you were, okay, maybe decent at golf, and then did you seek like a coach right away?
No, not really. I was just kind of on YouTube and just searched up whatever videos on YouTube, and I didn't really have a lesson until I was probably like 17.
Okay.
Or have like a coach. I worked at a course in the city.
Yeah.
And they told me if I worked there, I could play free golf. So
perfect.
Yeah. And then there was a professional there, and he kind of helped me a little bit along the way, and helped me just get better and stuff. So.
So you're 17, and it's kind of like decision time for hockey, university, yeah, college, the States, like how did that all play out for you?
I guess COVID kind of made it easier for me to stop playing hockey.
Right.
And I just played my last year of high school hockey, and well, I got cut short, but anyway, just finished that off, and then I really wanted to keep going with golf, and I thought I had a real chance of getting a good scholarship somewhere. So I tried to do some summer classes, get my grades up a little bit.
Right, that
and,
helps.
And during COVID, kind of just rented out a warehouse and just started hitting balls, and just figured when it comes back around, when we're allowed to play again, just play some really good golf and see where it goes from there.
Huh. So you rented out a warehouse. Did you, like, you set up a simulator?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess my dad knew somebody in Mississauga, and he had a couple warehouses where they weren't selling because it was COVID. Nobody was buying it. So he said that me and my sister could use it. So we set up, we went to Home Depot and bought a big tarp.
Yeah.
We put it up, and my sister had, she does gymnastics, so she had like a big big trampoline mat.
Yeah.
And her gymnastics was on Zoom for a while. True. So we would be there at like 7 o'clock in the morning, and she'd be doing Zoom, and I'd be hitting balls. And yeah, that worked for a couple months while we couldn't go anywhere.
So I guess like you kind of, or at least your dad probably had a pretty good sports mentality, being like a hockey coach and running a school.
Yeah.
So he kind of probably instilled in you, I guess, like what it takes to quickly excel. But that's still crazy. Like, I'm sure, I mean, fast forward, you go down to the States to play golf. You must have been the freshest guy by a mile. Like, everyone probably grew up since they were 5 with a golf club in their hand.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody you talk to from like Texas or Florida, like when you start playing golf, they're like 2, 1, 2, or until they can remember. So
yeah,
yeah, it's like, it's different in Canada because our there's a lot of guys who grow up playing hockey or a different sport or whatever it is, and golf's not really the first one that comes to mind when you say, what'd you grow up playing? So,
right.
Yeah, worked out.
So you're hitting balls in the warehouse.
Yeah.
And then how does college down in the States happen?
So after COVID was over, there's kind of a couple of the golf tournaments that I played in. I took a gap year after I graduated, and I won a couple of them. And then
What were the tournaments?
It was called MJT Team Challenge. It was in Niagara Falls.
Okay.
And then there was another one. I forget what it was called, but it was in Burlington, I believe.
Okay.
And I played really well in there. The one I won in a playoff, and the other one I won, I think, by one or two strokes. And the field was pretty good, so that helped me out a little bit.
Right.
So a couple schools reached out, and then I started reaching out to a couple as well because there's so many.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent out a bunch of emails, and I got some replies and them saying that if you wanted to come visit the school, this and that, talked about scholarship money, obviously, because it's pretty expensive.
Right.
And obviously where it's located, because it's pretty nice to play golf year-round. So
sure.
Wouldn't want to go. My first choice wasn't really to go somewhere that was the same weather as Ontario.
Yeah.
So just kind of that, and just had a couple month long conversations with a couple coaches and kind of decided from there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you settled on, what is it, New Mexico?
New Mexico, yeah.
So that must have been a big jump from Southern Ontario.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
She's hot.
Yeah, it is hot. It's, they told me, so when I was talking to the coaches, they said it was right on the border of Texas and New Mexico, and you tell people you're going to New Mexico, they think, oh, Mexico. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, man, like, it's New Mexico. But, yeah, it was hot, like, September there, like, the 1 month after we got down there, I think they said it was, like, 110 or something like that, which is absurd, and the humidity was brutal, too. So, yeah, it was pretty hot.
Was it a big adjustment to play in those conditions?
Yeah, I think so. Like, you're just sweating, like, and we wear gloves, right? And it's like I had to bring a rain glove down because, like, my hand was sweating so much and it was slipping. And it's also like it's you have to sort of be conditioned to because you have to walk 36 holes the one day, and it's like walk 36 in 110 degrees, and try and play golf. It's pretty tough, even though it doesn't seem like a lot because you're just walking, but it gets to you after a while.
For sure, it's super mental, and there's nothing that heat does more than distract you and can put you in that kind of panic mode.
Yeah, for sure.
Right, so. You play your, and I don't know how college golf works. Like, mm-hmm. is everyone a starter, or do guys sit out?
Yeah, so usually, like, I think the average college golf team maybe has 10 guys.
Okay.
Some have more, just depending on, like, the program. And usually, to take to a tournament, you bring 5 guys,
okay,
which is a team. Sometimes coaches just bring individuals if they're playing well. Or big school, sometimes they bring 2 teams. But generally, it's just 1 team, 5 guys.
Right.
So the weeks leading up to the golf tournament, we played probably 7 or 8 qualifying rounds. And that's just on your home track. And top 5 lowest scores move on to the tournament. The rest of the guys stay home, and they don't travel. So
right.
You're playing on a really good team. It's kind of tough. Like, you play really good golf, and you still don't qualify, and your boys are leaving for the weekend, and they're going to a different state to where we were at school. It was a bit of a shithole. So
right,
it's nice to get out and travel and get in the car, right? But yeah, so it's usually count 4 scores.
Okay.
And the 5th guy just dropped, but yeah, it's count 4, take 5.
Yep.
Sometimes individuals, but yeah.
So that first year, were you getting in the van to go, or were you being left behind?
Oh yeah, I played every golf tournament, which was nice.
Right on.
Yeah, I played good enough in those weeks that I got to travel every week.
So that's your first year, and then so while you're playing now, you're really exposed to the best guys all over the States.
Yeah.
How did the mindset for you change, or at least seeing how you kind of stacked up, was it, oh man, I could really be a professional golfer once you got down there?
Yeah, I think for myself, it was kind of like, damn, these guys are really good.
Yeah.
Like, not that the guys in Canada aren't any good, but there's some really good golfers in Canada, but you're kind of playing the best of the best kind of guys. And it's like, if you show up and you practice and you do all those things, and you can shoot scores and you can be inside that top 10 as a freshman, as a kid who's 19 years old, and you're playing against sometimes 23, 24 year olds.
Sure.
It kind of gives you some confidence to be like, okay, like, we belong here. We can play.
Right. Right. So I guess jumping right into the accident, mm-hmm. You know, and we'll put a link to that little TSN video. Is a good video on it. What year did that happen? Was that in your first or second year?
First year. Yeah.
So run me through where you guys were traveling to a tournament.
Yeah, we were, so we were traveling in Midland, Texas, which is, it's like a 2-hour, 30-minute drive, I think, something like that. So the day before, we got up at 4 o'clock, coach drove, played a practice round, came back, and it's a 3-day event. Then we went back the next day, so we woke up again 4 o'clock, started driving at 4:30, whatever, get there. We played all 36, and then we got back in the van, and we went to Chick-fil-A for dinner or lunch, whatever.
Right on.
And then got back.
Good American food.
Yeah, got back in there, and then the last thing I kind of remember is just trying to break the glass to get out of the van.
So you lost memory from before that?
Like before?
Before the crash.
Yeah.
Like you don't remember?
Like, I remember playing a little bit of the round, and
yeah.
I remember leaving, and I remember eating at Chick-fil-A. Like, I know what I had, and a bunch of the boys got milkshakes. Like,
right.
I know what we were doing. And then getting in the van, it's just, like, no idea. And then the first thing I remember waking up in the hospital was, like, probably 3 weeks after.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I guess your memory, or you being able to tell the story, is what you've been told of the crash.
Sort of, yeah. Like, when I first got to the hospital, and, like, sheriffs were showing up, and police officers, and there was news people trying to get in and everything else, I said a couple things that I don't remember, but they say that these things happened. Like I was saying, like, I got out of the bus, and then I climbed back in. I tried to get somebody out. I couldn't get them back out. Then I jumped back out, and I crawled, whatever, and then I said some things about what I heard, which I don't remember, obviously, but it's just what I said and what they told me that I said, right? It's kind of confusing, but I guess I knew what I was talking about in
right.
the beginning, but I just now...
Lost that.
Yeah, I lost it, yeah.
So I guess what happened was a head-on crash with
yeah,
a truck?
Some guy was on meth.
Really?
Yeah, and he was driving with his son, 13-year-old son. It's kind of like a 2-lane highway, like Highway 6 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And I guess they were driving on a spare tire, and it blew. And so they veered off into our lane. Speed limits are, like, ridiculously high in Texas, too. It's, like, 85 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's fast.
It's, like, 120, I think, or something. I don't even know.
A little quicker
know.
Even, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, he hit us, and then I guess he had ammunition in the back of his truck. Something with the engines, I don't know, that they just caught on fire. And then the ammunition is also obviously flammable.
Sure.
So it made it worse. And then...
So both vehicles caught on fire?
Yeah, both were in flames.
And what were you guys in? Like a little bus type deal?
Yeah, it's kind of like... I don't even know what to call it. It's like...
Like a Sprinter van?
Yeah,
type
Sprinter
thing?
Van.
Okay.
Yeah, Ford Sprinter van.
Okay,
yeah. And they were driving a Ford F-150, I think, or something like that. But yeah, it was a Sprinter van. Two seats in the front, and then a row behind that, row behind that, row behind that. My buddy, the other Canadian who survived, he was sitting beside me, and he was ejected out the side of the window, and he landed... They say 65 feet from the van.
Jeez.
Yeah, and then, so then everybody else was kind of trapped inside, and that's pretty much it.
So you don't remember, but from, I guess, piecing it back together, how did you get out?
Yeah, so I remember, like, I still remember I was wearing a red golf shirt, took the golf shirt off, wrapped it around my arm, and that's why I got staples, plates in my arm. Right. I started punching and kicking the window, and I guess I broke it, and I got out, and then my buddies were trapped inside, so I tried to go back in.
Yeah, and it was on fire at this point.
Yeah, and they told me that's how I got most of my injuries. It was going back inside the van.
Right.
And then I tried to pull somebody out. Obviously, I still, not as much anymore, but I had really, real bad nightmares in the beginning, like
sure.
grabbing somebody and just yelling and screaming and obviously failed to get somebody out, right?
Yeah.
So try to pull them out. And then I guess it was so hot, I got back out or something like that. I don't know. And then they told me that I crawled to the side of the shoulder, and then that's where two bystanders, like just civilians, were driving by, and they got out and they started to help myself and Hayden.
Right. So you guys were the only survivors of the entire thing.
Yeah.
Including the guys who hit you.
Yeah. Him and his son passed away, unfortunately. Unfortunately for the son.
Yeah.
I don't feel bad for the father, but
yeah. Tough deal.
Yeah.
So you wake up in the hospital like 3 weeks later. Was that did they like an induced coma, or was that just brain injuries?
I think I was awake. I may have been in an induced coma for a couple of days, but I don't think very long. I was awake. I just don't remember any of it.
Wow.
The first couple of weeks, yeah, like I guess they were calling, and there was like a passcode that you had to say because there's so many news people trying to cover it. So I talked to a couple family members.
Yeah.
Then my family showed up. I don't remember that either.
And that must have been, like, I guess you know now, but like, how did your parents hear about it? And they must have just been panicked.
Yeah. So I usually call my dad after round, right? Always just tell him what's going on and that we're on the way back. And I didn't call him. And I guess he called me and no answer, right? So he just thought nothing of it, that I was just sleeping or something. But my mom got a call from a housing supervisor at University Medical Center. And somebody tried to call my dad 10 minutes before and he didn't answer. But she got on the phone and she said that your son's been in an accident and all that kind of stuff, and she was just kind of in denial, like, no, he's at school, like, that's, I don't know who you're talking about, kind of thing, right? And she had to repeat it multiple times because my mom wasn't really registering it. And then my dad's not really a religious guy, but my mom says that he was on the edge of the bed on his knees praying, kind of thing. They say the toughest part was going across the hall to tell my sister. Oof. Yeah, that her brother, that they had to leave immediately, that her brother may not make it through the night. And me and her were pretty close. We do a lot together. So it was pretty tough for her. And my girlfriend she didn't hear from me either, which is...
Was she up here?
Yeah, she was at Brock University.
Okay.
In St. Catharines. And which is kind of unusual because I'll tell her that how the round went or whatever, and she didn't hear from us. And so she kept telling her mom that she thinks something's wrong, and her mom just said, no, he's probably just out partying with the boys or something like
right.
that. But yeah, so then I guess my mom called Emma and told her, and they got on a flight immediately and rushed through TSA or whatever it is, and they got there. And they say that seeing me like that was probably the one of the toughest things for them.
Yeah, I'm sure it was an ugly scene.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you finally woke up, how did they explain, I guess, like what happened, or did they start with kind of the extent of your injuries? And
yeah, they started with, so initially they thought the 13-year-old kid was driving, just by based off, because they didn't know because they were burned to death, so it was kind of hard to tell, but based off of based off of the size of the people, they thought that the smaller kid, smaller body was a 13-year-old, so they thought he was driving. So that was a thing for a long time, and we were all like, what
why? The heck?
Yeah. Why? And then obviously changed to the, which is no better, I guess, right? But yeah, then they told me, one of the first things I remember is that they're going to have to amputate both my legs.
Wow.
Yeah, and I guess they kind of told me, or told my dad that in the waiting room, and he said, no, we'll take him anywhere else.
Yeah.
They don't take his legs. And then they said, well, we're going to have to go and tell Dayton because he's an adult. He's 19 years old.
Right.
And my dad said, if you go in there and tell Dayton that you're amputating his legs, I'm going to knock you out.
Yeah.
Told the doctor that in the waiting room. And my dad being like a hockey guy, that's just the way he is, right? But yeah, that eventually they told me. I wanted to play golf again, and I wanted to do things like I used to do. So I kind of just took no for an answer.
Yeah.
And they just told me that I was burned. My 50% of my body was burned.
What degree burns?
Third and fourth degree burns. Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah. So it's all like new skin from my body.
Yeah.
Luckily they didn't, well, it probably would have grown back by now, but to get skin grafts, sometimes they shave your head.
You're right.
And I had long hairs too, so
right.
They were all concerned about that, but no, I didn't have to shave the head, just got it from the arms and from the chest.
So how did you stay there, or did you guys go elsewhere when they told you?
No, I stayed there.
Okay, yeah. So you guys yeah. got the doctors to reconsider?
Yeah, they said, okay, well, I'll try and do it. If it doesn't work, then right. obviously we're going to have to do something about it, but let me just try it. So they took me into surgery.
Yeah.
And I guess it's called skin grafts. They put a whole whack of skin grafts on, and they said it stuck and that I was healing pretty good. So they said that was going to work.
So it was only from, like, it wasn't like shattered legs or infection or anything like that. It was simply the burns they were yeah. going
to
do it.
I guess they had to, in the beginning when I first got there, they took like 3 hours getting like glass and stuff out of my legs.
Yeah.
Just because there was so much debris and like there's no skin there, right, which is pretty ugly to look at. Even myself, like looking at my legs, like they look destroyed.
Still.
Yeah. Well, now they're a little bit better. They obviously, if I wear shorts, people obviously look and see, like, why is this young kid got, like, his legs don't look like mine sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, in the beginning, it kind of was like, yeah, my legs look like they're destroyed, and are they ever going to get back to normal sort of thing? But
So they took you into surgery right away, and then I guess they told you fairly soon after that that it was a success, like that you're going to...
Yeah, they told my parents that it was a success. The doctors told me that I wouldn't be able to golf for a year to 2 years.
Right.
Which obviously I've reached my goal of golfing within the year, so which is good. But yeah, they just said that we did it. It's going to take a long time to heal. There's still other complications that you have to deal with.
And right.
Not just the burns. But yeah, that it worked and it was successful.
So run me through, I guess, the dates. When was the accident?
March 15th, 2022.
So like just past a year now.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah. When did you find it? Was Hayden? Is Hayden the other guy?
Yeah, Hayden. Yeah.
Yeah. The only other guy who survived.
Right.
When did you find out that he was alive?
Yeah, that's a tricky one because it was kind of like, I was asking, like, what happened sort of thing. And my dad was like, yeah, I asked about my buddy Tiago, and he said, yeah, he passed away. I asked about everybody.
Yeah.
And he said that they passed away, and he told me that Hayden was next door. And I got to see him pretty quickly. Mm. So when he got out of the hospital and I was still in there, he was walking with a boot because he broke his ankle, and he kind of walked in there. And it was nice to see him and see a familiar face from the team. But, yeah, they kind of just told me that. They didn't really want to tell me what happened, but they just told me that they passed away.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That must have been crazy tough.
Yeah, it was pretty tough. In the beginning, I guess, I was in so much pain all the time that, like, I didn't really get a chance to register, like, what actually happened and that they're actually gone until, 3 months after, where I was in rehab. And it was kind of like my pain's tolerated a little bit.
Mm.
I'm working on getting better. And it's like the mental state of it comes. And you kind of think in there and you're like, you go to a whole new country and you make another big family. Like, you're on a team and they all pass away. It was pretty tough. Still is tough.
Yeah. Whew. Like, burns are super painful as an injury. Did they keep you on painkillers for a long time during that?
Yeah. They had, they got to a point where I had like a remote. Like, if I was in pain, I'd just click it and I guess it'd go through the IV and, it would just give me medicine. It was pretty bad. Like, that's probably the worst amount of pain I've been in my whole life. Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know. Like, there was some hard medication too that they gave me, just to try and make me feel better. But it was pretty bad.
Yeah. And then, so how long was your stay in the hospital?
86 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
And like, I guess you could get up and move, or were you pretty bedridden?
Like, a physio would come in, every day or every 2 days. And just get me up, and I'd walk 5 steps maybe. And the goal was to get to the door.
Right.
Which is, like, not very far, right? But when I was like that, it seemed like it was so far. But, yeah, they would try and get me up every day. And then I would go sit back down in the chair or something. But I didn't walk much until maybe, like, the 80th day, where it was kind of like a walk down the hall, walk back. It was in a walker.
Yeah.
I got to walk to the shower, which was good as well. And then I kind of graduated to just a cane.
Yep.
And then did all that. And then, and then I started walking on my own.
So I guess give me what was the full extent of your injuries? Obviously a pretty decent head injury.
I think I just had a mild concussion.
Wow.
Didn't have a head injury like Hayden did. We were transferred to 2 different hospitals. He went to a brain hospital or head trauma.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything wrong with my head, thankfully. I just my forearm and just the burns. And
what was your forearm?
He was broken in a couple places or something like that.
Yeah.
They just threw 2 plates in it and some nails or pins or whatever, and told me, so when I was on the walker I could hold it with this hand, and then like this hand had to stay not touching anything.
Yeah,
just kind of weird because the right one's my dominant hand, so I just want to grab everything with the right.
Right.
They told me I couldn't eat with it for a bit, so it's hard to put food in my mouth with my left hand.
Did you lose like a bunch of weight sitting in the bed all day?
Yeah, I probably weighed like 165 pounds at school, and they weighed me one time at like 125.
Wow.
And it's just because you're losing like so much liquid. There's pictures of me sitting there, and it's just like the bed is like, it's wet, right? That's from different, all the burns and everything. It's just because there's no skin to hold the liquid in.
Mm.
So they have you on like, they just give you a bunch of calories kind of thing. It's like looks like a milk bag.
Okay.
And it has like 6,000 calories in it that they just feed you through an IV.
Right.
And they just tell you to just eat, which is kind of hard because I didn't know this, but you're not allowed to drink water as a burn patient.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Again, it's something to where like the water flushes out all the liquid.
Mm.
So you would be losing more weight.
Right. And like probably a lot of the minerals and stuff that you need.
And I drink a lot of water. Like, that's really the only thing I drink, right?
Yeah.
And I asked for water, and they were like, no, you can't have any. I was like, what do you mean I can't have any water? And and they were like, yeah, you're not allowed to drink any water. So my lips were so dry. Like, it was brutal. But I guess,
ice cubes?
Yeah, crushed ice cubes, yeah. They told me I couldn't swallow them. So I had, like, this suction thing, right?
Yeah.
A few got by.
Yeah. So what was your mindset in those days in the hospital? Was it just get by, or was it more, like, really driven to go back and play sports again?
Yeah, it was more to go back and play sports again for my teammates. Mm. I got a couple calls from Golf Canada, contacted my dad and asked me if I wanted to go to the Canadian Open.
Right.
Just to watch and stuff. And I said, absolutely. And it was kind of the beginning of June.
Yep.
It's coming up on, it's Wednesday, it starts tomorrow, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, I had a little glass window in there. My sister, she would come in every morning and she would knock down the days. And it would kind of be like, that's when we're going home. That's when we're getting home. But also, it's like I still want to chase my dream of playing professional golf, and that's all I've ever wanted to do is play,
right?
Play sports as I grew up. So, I think it'd be a hell of a story if I got back there.
For sure, yeah. For sure. So you came home, mm-hmm. And then what did, I guess recovery look like? Did you have to kind of relearn anything? Was there a whole bunch of adaptations you needed to make?
Yeah, relearning how to walk probably was the toughest part. I just didn't really know how to move my legs because I lost so much power in them, I guess. So I went to physio. I was there probably 3-4 days a week in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just working with a physio guy and getting strength back up and things like that. And then when I was allowed to play golf again, which is pretty much as soon as I got home, I would hit a couple balls. It was pretty tough just to get around there, just to, like, walk up some hills and whatever. So that was pretty tough. But it was mainly just, like, leg and upper body focus, just trying to – because laying down for 3 months and then trying to get up, it was kind of tough.
Yeah.
And just gradually started to get better.
Did you get a golf cart where you could drive right up to the greens?
Yeah, I guess you could put the carts in like handicap mode.
Yeah.
But I learned how to shut them right off. There's just a button at the back. You just click off and you drive it wherever.
Right.
I didn't drive any on the green, but it was pretty close. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I could just get out of the cart. I got yelled at one time for doing it. Nobody that worked there, was just the member.
Right.
That's a hell of a story, but
why was there a confrontation?
Yeah, so Father's Day, I was out with my dad and my coach and his dad. It was one of the first rounds I was playing, and obviously I had the cart where I could roll up pretty close to the green.
Yeah.
But this time it was like the third hole. I didn't roll up real close. There's two wheels still on the cart path, and some guy from the other hole yells, "So you can't park that there." And I had bandages on my legs at the time, and I figured, okay, just let him be. I'll get out and I'll start limping and he'll just stop talking, right? So I get up and I walk into the green and he's still yelling, right? So my coach says, I'll go over there and handle it, right? So he goes over there, talks to him, and I guess it doesn't work. He says, Happy Father's Day. The guy tells him to F off, right? And then my dad's like, all right, I'll handle it, right? So he walks over there. And I said to my coach's name is Chris. I said to Chris and his dad, I said, all right, that's it. 3 holes, we're done. He's going to get in a fight.
Mm.
We're out of here. And the guy is just yelling at him. He's an old grumpy guy, right? It's Father's Day. Like, why are you yelling at people?
Yeah.
And he goes, do you belong to the club? Because it's a private course, right? And he goes, have you ever felt a club before? And then I guess he was playing with 3 random guys, and they just wanted nothing to do with him.
Sure.
So they walked away, and we were just yelling and whatever. So that was about it. He just walked away, and we went on, and I just played the rest of the round.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So I guess it was strength, building back strength. Did you have to change your, like, your swing at all or anything like that?
A little bit, like, mechanically. Like, my feet don't move like they did before. Both of them are kind of on the ground while I hit the ball. Before, my heel was kind of up on my right foot when I hit it. But I kind of just try and make a natural move still. Whatever. However I started swinging when I got back, that's kind of the way it looks like a little bit now. But, yeah, it's just kind of getting stronger and getting faster again, because that's part of the game is
having power.
Having power, being fast. It's a new game, right? Like, they play these yardages so long that you got to be able to hit the ball far enough. So
would you say you're back to your ability before the accident?
Probably not, no.
Okay.
There's part of me that feels like myself again, and part of it is where my legs just, they need so much work. Like, I've been able to jog and run a little bit. Obviously, it's not very fast, but sort of getting back to that is good, and I've gained a little bit more weight, too, which I can lift more. I can swing a little bit harder. And I still work at it during the on-season, but off-season is probably, this next one coming up will probably be the biggest one that I've had in a while.
To just go to the gym and try and gain weight and muscle? Yeah,
go to the gym, just do, I just lift, like, to get stronger, too. Like, I don't really do a lot of, I guess, I do a lot of golf-oriented stuff, but when I'm just trying to, just lift heavy and get stronger.
Yeah.
Just kind of just generic things.
Yep.
And just eat more, eat right, sort of for the off season, and that just makes you more prepared for when the tournament comes around.
Is there any, because I'm into a lot of fitness stuff, and I lift and have a cold tub and a sauna and stuff.
Yeah.
Is any of that like part of your regimen, or is any of that you're restricted? From doing
The cold stuff, I love it now because I'm always really hot, and they say it has something to do with the burns and stuff.
So I
love doing that. Like, I do it all the time. Like, my mom jokes about it, she says that I save hot water, sort of thing. But yeah, the cold tub, I haven't really tried. I wasn't allowed to go in. We have a hot tub at home. I wasn't really allowed to go in like a hot tub or something really, really hot. I think this summer maybe a little bit, try the pool out maybe too. But yeah, cold stuff for sure. I think I tell people all the time, like, I feel way better when I go in a cold tub or like take a cold shower or something.
Yeah. It's never regret it.
No, it's pretty, it's good.
Yeah. I've heard, just even before, probably before golf, like anytime when you're hot, like if you get in the cold beforehand, there's lasting effects for keeping your body temperature down. Do you have like a regimen where you have to like put a bunch of creams on and prep yourself? Do you wear like long sleeves and pants always when you golf?
So last summer I had to wear compression like leggings, sort of thing. And they're kind of custom, like they're really, really tight to make your skin flat. And those were really, really hot. And I have to wear one on my upper body too. So I don't have to wear the legs anymore, so I can just walk out in shorts now and just kind of do that. This, my skin on my arms is pretty sensitive, so I still wear UV sleeves. Or I really haven't done a lot of sunscreen on them. I just put the UV sleeves on. But yeah, there's kind of that. First, like when I first got home, I still had to do something called like wound care. And that's kind of, again, put like ointments on or like sort of creams to, because there were still really open spots, and just kind of put bandages over it and then wrap it. And the skin gets really dry, so lotioning and stuff is really what you have to do with it. But now it's just really lotioning, and I only have like one or two open spots that I just put a bandage on and just replace it every day when I take a shower.
Right. So when you say open spots, like it's still healing, or will you do another skin graft on those spots?
They're not big enough for skin grafts. So they say that it's going to heal by itself. It's just going to take a while. And it's on the back of the knee. So it's kind of like your knee's doing up and down all day.
Right.
so they said you'll have a spot that is really, really tough to close, and it'll close, and then it'll open up back again.
Right.
You just have to be patient with it. And I said, yeah, that's fine. Like, it doesn't really hurt.
Mm.
Like, unless somebody whacks it, then it hurts. But if it doesn't hurt, it doesn't really bother me.
Right. So that ended your college career short, mm-hmm. right? So now you're 1 year out of that. You would have been at the end of your second year of school.
Yeah.
How has that, I guess, changed your plan for golf?
Yeah.
You have no ambitions to go back to school?
I still don't know.
Mm.
I would be open to going back to school. It had to be the right spot, obviously. I just don't know if I could get back in a bus and travel a long distance again. Like, I think it'll be pretty tough.
Yep.
It's something that I could probably get over for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Like, it's like I was so driven to go to school, get an education. And fortunately for myself, like, so many opportunities have opened up, like you guys, like whoever it is that I can share my story with.
Mm.
And it's kind of, I can do golf along with just speaking out, or I've done some motivational speaking kind of thing and just telling my story.
Yep.
And people seem to really like that, which I'm so grateful for, that people want to hear it. So it's like, do I really need to go back to school? Do I really need to get an education?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going back just to do school.
Right.
If I go back, it's to play on a golf team.
Right.
But I still really haven't decided.
Sure. It's still yet. Pretty fresh.
Yeah.
What are, I guess, some of the struggles? Like you were saying, you had nightmares right after it. What are some of the mental struggles from that?
I think it's just, it's tough. Talking to some of the families, it's like their children passed away, and Hayden and I feel like it's not fair. And they say, well, what good is it if nobody made it, kind of thing, right? And also, it's, I know we were only at school for a year, but you get pretty close with these people. Like, you live with them.
Mm-hmm.
You hang out with them every day. You buy them lunch. They buy you lunch, whatever. And it's your best friend in a different country, and they get taken away. And something like that is pretty tough. That's probably one of the biggest mental struggles that I have, is just knowing that they're gone, and I'll never be able to say goodbye.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Has that, I guess, changed your, or, you know, fostered a growth in your kind of outlook on life, like a, you know, like a fatalism, or, you know, that there's no, you know, whatever, like there's things in life that happen that you can't control, kind of thing?
Yeah. I think, I mean, everybody says that life can be taken away from you,
mm-hmm.
at any moment. And, yeah, it's just like how quickly things can get taken away from you is so unfair.
Mm.
And I don't know, like, there, 1 minute you're playing golf, and the next minute you're almost dead, right? Mm-hmm. So I've kind of learned to, like, I go out on the golf course, it's gonna be my last time that I'm playing. Don't have any sort of regrets. Be prepared when you go out there, and just give it your all, whatever you're doing. And it's also a privilege to be out there. Like, I saw a lot of things in the hospital where it's like there's children in there who are born with things that we don't have, and we don't have to deal with. And we're lucky that we don't have to go to the hospital every month, or stay in a hospital for a year, or be able to breathe properly, or just different stuff like that. It's like, I've told people, like, it's such a privilege to be able to walk, to be able to breathe, to be able to do all that kind of stuff. 'Cause there's a lot of people that wish they could be in your situation.
For sure. For sure. It's has it been like, I guess, like a, how do I put it? Like a renewed reminder on life that it's, we're here to,
yeah,
like we're here to have fun and play, and it is a gift. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't get so worked up about so many little things, and you talk to people like they walk into a gas station in the morning and they're just giving it to the cashier.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, what is your problem? Like there's things that can be going on in your life. But if it's like somebody cuts you off in the morning or like your wife burnt your toast, like you just needed to give it a break a little bit and open your eyes and be like, why am I in such a bad mood? There's so many other things that can be going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That you, like, you have so many things in this life that you can look forward to, and you're just in a bad mood for no reason.
Right. Right. I guess, yeah, gratitude.
Yeah, that's the word. Yeah, gratitude. Have some of that.
Yeah. Huh. So what does the ideal path forward look like for, and again, like, I'm not the guy, I don't understand the path for golf to, obviously the goal is the PGA Tour or the LIV Tour, whatever.
Yeah.
They're the same thing now, I guess, as it like today.
Yeah.
But, how does that path forward now as a 20, you're 20, right?
20, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. A 20-year-old Canadian look, like, are you just, how does that work?
So I really want to just see how, like, the summer goes with the tournaments that I have lined up, that some of I've been invited to, some of them I've got exemptions into.
Okay.
I just want to see how those really go, and that kind of will determine whether, like, okay, maybe I just go to school for, just graduate, play a couple more years, graduate, or the other thing would be just playing some of these high-end events.
Mm.
And obviously you have to do well in them. And it's kind of like a season-long thing. I guess if you get on the Mackenzie Tour, like...
And you're saying that's the Canadian Tour. That's the highest level you play in Canada?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's, like, they call it Q School in the wintertime.
Okay.
Or they have some now, I believe. So you just kind of qualify for that, and then you get status on a tour like that. And then if you do well, obviously, you can go... There's parts you can go straight to the PGA Tour, or you get Korn Ferry Tour status.
Okay.
And that's like, I guess that's like, you could say that's the one right below the PGA Tour.
Sure.
Korn Ferry, which is primarily in the United States. And then I think, I forget what the number is, it could be top whatever. At the end of the season, they get a tour card.
Yep.
And they get into select events for the year, and they can do all that kind of stuff. But now there's so many different ways that you can get in.
Mm.
Every event on the PGA Tour has mostly every event has a Monday qualifier.
Okay.
And you do well, you place top four probably, you get to play in that event for the week.
Is that an open?
Yeah, just anybody can.
Really? Okay.
They say you have to have, I don't know who runs them, but like if you try and register for a USGA, then you have to have a handicap of whatever and below.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty much you can just go on. It's like probably $450, maybe more than that. But you register one day event, shoot as low as you can, you make it, you get to play in the PGA Tour event that week. Obviously you make the cut, and whatever they have issued for that week, then you can get status for a month or status for a year or something like that. But there's so many ways. But I guess for myself, is just try and do as well as I can in some of these events that I'm playing in.
Yep.
And really try and win something, and just keep moving forward that way.
So it's a little bit of, like, there's an invitational aspect to some of it. So there's, like, publicity is important.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for myself and Hayden, this one coming up next week in Calgary, we got invited to it.
Yep.
And that's kind of just us getting back into it and showing everybody that we can still play.
Mm.
And these people really want to see us, and think that's a really good idea that we show up and sort of be at their tournament. And obviously it's a really big tournament, so we said yes. But yeah, it's like if you're a good known golfer, you get invited to a lot of these things.
Right.
And obviously if you're on Team Canada or something like that, like you get invited to more of them.
Right. So golf's in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So do you have that goal at all?
So that's so new that it's like I don't really know how you get into that.
Yeah.
Last Olympics, it was all, maybe not all, but there was primarily all of them played on the PGA Tour.
Sure.
So I think it's something to do with like qualifying that way, and they just want to, I guess they want to send their best players.
Right.
And I think that's country oriented too.
Yeah.
Like the Canadians that they sent were on the PGA Tour. But I think maybe it may change a little bit if some of them don't want to go, but I think they'll always be picking from the highest tour that they can.
Right. The Mackenzie Tour, the highest level in Canada, because I'm curious, because I race the Canadian NASCAR series, and that's the highest level in Canada. Can you make a living just playing the Mackenzie Tour?
I think so. Like, I don't think it's, you'd have to, I think just making the cut, probably not.
Mm.
I guess some of the purses are going up now with everything that's going on.
Mm.
But I think if you place well in a few of them and you have some good sponsors, I think that you could.
Yep.
But I think that's probably like to support a family and whatever else. I don't think that's...
Be a grind?
It'd be a tough go.
Right. So you're saying you're not quite back to where you were. Do you anticipate kind of by the end of this golf season the scores will be similar?
I think so. Like, I've practiced and I've played and I've shot a lot of good scores, and some of the first ones that I shot this year were pretty good.
Mm.
I finished second in a couple. And I've only played three so far, so it's still early yet. So I'm just hoping that these next ones coming up that I can just show up and play some good golf and show myself and everybody else that I can still play.
Right. Did the, I guess being out of golf or, you know, sitting in the hospital or wherever it was, did that force you to kind of explore other parts of yourself as, you know, hey, my identity has been wrapped up in being a golfer. You know, now I might not be a golfer.
Yeah.
Did you kind of look at that stuff? Did you look at other interests or?
Yeah, it's the other, again, like that speaking kind of stuff. Like, I never would have thought that I would be out there speaking to a bunch of people.
Mm.
Not that I wasn't really a good public speaker, but I probably wasn't very good.
Yeah.
English class wasn't my best thing. But yeah, it was kind of like people want to hear your story. They want to talk to you. So in the hospital, I kind of thought about it, like, yeah, maybe I can do something like that.
Mm.
But it was always like, I'm going to get back to playing golf. There's no way around that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was like, we can do this speaking thing and we can motivational speak. We can tell the story. I just want to tell people about my teammates kind of thing, right? Like, everybody, I think they deserve everybody to know who they are, because they were such good people, and their legacy needs to move on as the years go on.
Right. So you and Hayden, that'll be your, you know, banner, or you guys will carry that forward.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, finally, I try and ask my guests for advice for other people. You know, what kind of advice do you have for individuals who haven't faced, you know, such adversity, that you could kind of give them, because they might never face such adversity, right? And, like you were saying, you know, you got a lot of a pretty big shift in the mindset.
Yeah. What first comes to mind for me is don't let yourself or anybody else tell you that you can't do anything. I think with a little bit of your noggin and a whole lot of heart, there's nothing that you can't achieve or that you can't do that you put your mind to. So it's kind of short, but it's sort of like just don't take no for an answer.
For sure. Yeah, that's definitely a good lesson. Yeah. You got your leg still. That's good, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate you coming on, taking the time.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, maybe thanks. We'll maybe you can give me some tips.
Yeah, sure. Sounds good.
Thanks, man. See you guys next week.